What's up, everyone? Welcome to today's episode of the Being Me podcast. I'm your host, psychiatrist Dr. Taiwo Olonge, and today we're thrilled to have a special guest whose journey embodies the power of resilience, transformation, and advocacy. Meet Jorge Alvarez, a beacon of hope in the fight against mental health stigma and a trailblazer in creating open dialogue, healing spaces. From navigating personal challenges at Rutgers University to becoming a viral sensation on TikTok for his candid reflections on mental health, cultural stigmas, and personal growth, Jorge's story is a testament to the strength found in vulnerability. Recognized by platforms like TikTok and giants like MTV and Going Digital Behavioral Health Tech Conference for his impactful narratives, Jorge shares his journey and paves the way for others to find their voice. As a Latino man who broke through cultural barriers to prioritize mental wellness, Jorge's work serves as a powerful reminder that our struggles do not define us, they propel us. So buckle up as we dive into the life of Jorge, a mental health advocate, creator, and visionary, changing the narrative one story at a time. Jorge, welcome. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Did I get it all right?
Wow, no, thank you for that lovely intro. Whenever I'm introduced and folks go off script in terms of what I have on my website, it's always welcomed because I get such different perspectives on who I am and what I do from a third party. So that was lovely. You got it all, I would say, for the most part. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. We'll get started. So in our podcast, we like to ask all our guests what they were like as a teen, what circles did they run in, what activities were they involved in, who was Jorge as a teen in high school?
As a teen, wow. I would not recognize myself right now if you were to put Jorge today in 2024 in front of Jorge then. In high school, I would say I like to describe myself as a typical teenage boy. And for me, what that means, because I know that that looked very different now, that really means someone who loved Xbox, who loved to play video games. I was an only child. So my really sense of community was two things. It was playing sports all year round, cross country, baseball, basketball. And then when I wasn't playing sports and when I came home, it was then playing video games in a competitive way as well with other people. So that was sort of my online community at the time. Wasn't really big on socials, wasn't really big into meme culture, although that's when it was at its peak for a lot of folks of my sort of side of Gen Z. And yeah, at the time I really did not have the awareness of mental health, which is the conversation we're diving into today that I do now. And that definitely was a major challenge for a number of reasons that we can get into with time here. But yeah, very different person then.
It's always interesting to hear how people talk about themselves when they were teenagers and how we've evolved so much. And I know you said in some ways you wouldn't recognize yourself now, but I'm sure there's a really relatively clear through line that kind of describes all the things that led you to where you're being at today. I know for you, one of the big things that you began to share about in the start of a lot of your advocacy was your challenges as a freshman at Rutgers and a complex and transformative period that was for you. Would you walk us through that experience, especially the moments that made you realize you need to get assistance and help?
Yeah. So in high school, especially the later half of my junior year and throughout my senior year, I was in a relationship. It was my first relationship at the time, and it was not a good one. Trigger warning, I experienced a lot of just emotional and verbal, I would say, abuse at the time through that relationship. And so that, in addition to still figuring out who I was, right? I didn't really know who I was. I didn't know what I was going to study. And I was gearing up for this huge chapter that I didn't really understand or know what to expect. I'm a first-generation college student specifically. And so kind of navigating the factors that I shared, in addition to being first gen and embarking on this journey, I felt a lot of pressure to get things right and do things well. And so when I started school at Rutgers, don't get me wrong, it was a super exciting moment. I was super proud of myself just to go to a school that had pretty strong and competitive programs in the different areas of interest that I had at the time. Because again, I was undecided, didn't really know what I wanted to pursue yet. But what really challenged me then, in addition to the personal factors, were just navigating school for the first time and not really having someone to turn to, being first gen and not really feeling safe to turn to folks. And so the combination of things led to me feeling what I now can recognize as depressed, super anxious, overwhelmed, stressed, the last two words that I just used were like the only way that I could express what I was feeling, right? Overwhelmed, stressed. I didn't really use anxious or depressed. It was later that I discovered that. And the reason why I was able to discover those terms and really identify with those diagnoses, really, when I finally got help in June 2018. So at the end of my first year of college, since I started in August 2017, it was honestly just me running into multiple moments where I was realizing that I wasn't who I previously was, with big quotes around that. I just felt very not myself. And I feel like that was the switch in my head that I'm interestingly grateful for. And when I was finally pointed towards our campus counseling center, that's when I realized, okay, there is a resource to potentially help what I'm possibly experiencing. And I underline possibly and potentially because, again, I still was so uncertain. And truly, it wasn't until I sat down, had a conversation with a counselor, which that in and of itself took a very long time for me to get access to, where I realized, oh, wow, everything that I'd been feeling and experiencing, these feelings of overwhelm, stress, were actually anxiety, was actually depression. And I was able then to have 20/20 vision and realize I was more unwell than I had realized throughout this entire last year. And that definitely impacted the way I was able to show up in classes, everything from attendance to grades, the way I was able to not cultivate relationships and struggled to just feel safe around others. So it definitely affected all aspects of what was supposed to be, in my mind, exciting, transformative first year. It was transformative, but just not in the way that I had anticipated.
In so many ways, starting college is such a big adjustment for everybody, but you describe being a first generation college student and the pressures that come with that. You've talked about your identity and the cultural identity that you bear and how that has impacted your ability to approach and navigate the mental health space. And I'm curious, what are some of the biggest misconceptions you had to confront, both within yourself and from a cultural stigma standpoint, with respect to getting mental health care and just navigating it in general?
Yeah, first and foremost, and this is again reinforced by cultural stigma, societal stigma, it was honestly just feeling like I needed help and feeling like I had something that needed to be addressed. Although, obviously, you don't need to have something that needs to be addressed to get help and to talk to a therapist, a counselor, you name it. For me, that was the reason why I needed it, right? And so trying to just reckon with that, and I think realize that I am still the same person I was a year and a half ago. I've just now had these experiences that have impacted me greatly. I think that was hard to accept. In high school, although, again, the later half of my high school experience was challenging for the reasons I shared and among other reasons, I think I generally was a pretty happy person. I was a pretty upbeat person, very involved in sports, very social. Even if I didn't really feel like I had my people back then, I was always doing something, always keeping busy. And then in school, that, or in undergrad in particular, that was sort of a 360. So that was really just the first part. It was just recognizing, oh, I'm actually going through something right now. It goes back to the typical narrative that we hear where we try to speak about mental health as equals of physical health. I definitely did not see that as the case then. So that was the first thing. I think the second factor was then also recognizing that there were various factors or various reasons behind why I struggled to speak up in the first place. And then almost confronting myself and asking why that was. And that's where I really began to unpack stigma as a topic and really understand it. I mentioned already cultural, societal stigma, but then there's also gender-based stigma around seeking help as a man. And I realized that I literally just never had anyone talk about mental health, period. The couple of moments where I think back to middle school, high school, where I felt anxious but didn't know at the time, my only way of sort of confronting that was telling my mom, hey, I don't feel good, and then hugging her. I have very distinct moments where I can recall feeling anxious, but I didn't know that then. I didn't know how to describe it back then. And so really recognizing that there were those factors that could have been prevented by simply having a conversation at an earlier point sort of made me feel like frustration for not having access to the resources, to the help, to the narratives that would have probably transformed my perception of self and what I experienced my first year of undergrad. So I can keep going, but those were, I think, the initial things that I was struggling with and had to sort of grapple with.
Yeah, you really hit on so many things, particularly the stigma and the difficulties that a lot of men might face with respect to mental health, how in so many ways we don't have a lot of models or people who have showed us in our life, being a person of color, being a man of color, being a Latino man in particular. Those things can be really difficult. And I think you really touched on how important it is to be able to ask for help when needed. I'm curious for you, thinking about listeners who might be struggling in their own ways or facing stigma that might prevent them from getting care, I wonder what advice you might give to someone who might be in a position similar to what yours looked like a couple of years ago, fearing judgment and misunderstanding from their community and that getting in the way of them being able to get the help they need.
Yeah, honestly, what really started to help me and what started to shift the needle, for lack of better words, in getting closer and becoming more comfortable and seeking that professional help to begin with was finding people in my campus community that I could begin to open up to and be more vulnerable with. That really was, I would say, my lifeline at the time. I didn't see that back then a lot of times. And even when I tell my story now, I jump straight to, oh, it's because I gained access to therapy through my campus counseling center. But no, the reality is it was really just finally towards the tail end of my first year, I was part of this service learning trip, alternative break during my spring break. And I met some really incredible people. And we were doing some really vulnerable work in community around the issue of hunger and homelessness and houselessness, rather. And being able to be around these like-minded folks, it was just a sense of connection that was cultivated. And I felt safe enough to push myself. And I say safe enough to push myself because I still had to really challenge myself to want to be more vulnerable. But I shared with folks, hey, I've had a really challenging year. That was it. I didn't go any deeper than that. But being able to just express that and then feel seen and validated by some of the folks that I had met who are now still some of my best friends from undergrad, but I had no clue then. That really was where me seeking help began to feel more comfortable. So I just want to encourage folks to turn to the people around you. I think it's so easy to want to wear a mask or feel like wearing a mask is the safer option. Trust me, I get it. But you don't know what opening up to that person, if you feel safe and willing, if you're able to, could really do for you. And so that was, for me, one of the first steps. And then I would say once I actually got the help I needed, because again, that was a challenging process professionally through the campus counseling center, it was really recognizing that there were these, in hindsight, these really specific ways that my year could have looked entirely different. I like to tell folks who might be going through the same thing that, one, they're just not alone in navigating the challenges that they are, but two, are ways to feel supported. And you may not see the solution right now, but there is one. And it's just taking the time to have those conversations and to build that community, to tap into the resources and be open, challenge yourself to be open to it. Because I really struggled to even be okay with that first session that I had scheduled, but I don't regret it one bit.
I'm really glad that you mentioned community, because my next question is about therapy. But in my work, the thing that I tell my clients is how important community is and how our work can only go so far. So just the fact that you are able to find community and encouraging people to be able to talk to others is so important, because so many people don't realize that what they're experiencing, while it's unique to them, is not a unique experience, and that a lot of humans are going through the same thing or might have gone through the same thing and have a lot to offer you. So I really appreciate that. Thinking a little bit about therapy specifically, you mentioned that there are many aspects of mental health that you weren't previously aware of. Can you share some lessons that therapy taught you in dealing with your own mental health challenges?
Honestly, the first thing was just recognizing that with time, as a teenager growing up, there were all these narratives from external voices that I had created or that were created for me that I had adopted and very much internalized. So what does that mean in like less buzzy terms? Basically, people would say things about me, people would make jokes, or I would consume media, social media that was pushing forth a narrative that I am this or I'm not that, or I can't do this or I can do that. And then from taking that, I then began to believe some of those things, whether or not they were objectively true, right? I believed it because it's what was being told to me and what was being pushed, spoon-fed to me over the course of years through middle school, high school, and even in my household, right? I just want to acknowledge that too. Living with parents who, one is a Cuban immigrant, the other one, my mom is Puerto Rican. So stigma to them was also very real. And so there were certain narratives around maybe keeping your emotions to yourself, not sharing with people, because if you share with someone, what might they do with that information? So there was a lot of these internal narratives, but then also these narratives that I created about others in the world that really prevented me from, like I said, wanting to speak to other people, feeling safe enough to be vulnerable, feeling like I can talk about what I'm navigating and feeling validated in that. That was one of the major things, is just recognizing that there are those narratives. And then there's also the ability to reframe those. That was some of the initial work I did around self-esteem and performance anxiety with school and just with other things I was working on. It was really addressing some of those immediate thoughts and thinking about how can we challenge them a bit more. That for me was like initially very transformative. And we did that work in different forms, right? There were worksheets, it was conversation. I was even tasked at one point to go to my friends and ask them, what are their thoughts of me? Like, realize that they see me in a much more beautiful light than I was seeing myself or thought that they would see me. Reframing was definitely, I would say, that first thing that was really transformative.
Sounds like you had a really awesome therapist.
Another thing I want to call out, actually, my therapist, my first therapist, was a Black woman who was also first gen. And I think that made a huge difference because although, again, I'm Cuban and Puerto Rican, there was so much we were able to relate on as just being part of marginalized communities that she helped make sense for me that I didn't even think made sense or knew could make sense. So I just want to shout that out because she was really, really a huge part of my journey, especially early on.
Definitely. That cultural connection is so critical, I think, particularly for communities of color. And it sounds like your therapist was awesome in being able to connect with you in that way.
For sure.
Now, I wanted to pivot a little bit and think about your platform and your expanding platform, specifically talking about social media and TikTok that you've used to help inspire youth around conversations and do a lot of advocacy around mental health. Your journey from personal struggle to becoming a vocal advocate and a creator is so inspiring. At what point did you decide to use your voice and experience to help others?
It was actually my sophomore year where I found an Active Minds chapter. Active Minds is a national mental health nonprofit, and they have a chapter network across the country, and my university happened to have one. I didn't know who Active Minds was at the time, but when this peer of mine had shared a flyer with me because they knew that I was starting to care a lot about mental health and talking about that with my friends. And when I found that space, my sophomore year, didn't really do much with it, but my junior and senior year and going into, because I did an extra semester, I did 4.5 years of undergrad, that really became like a physical space, a home base to really facilitate and cultivate more vulnerable conversations. And my inspiration to do that was, again, from my lived experience and struggling to find those spaces myself and find resources and recognizing that people oftentimes felt safer talking to other college students than like going to the campus counseling center, which can be really scary. And also, campus counseling centers are typically marketed and detailed as crisis centers, although they're not. That is a huge misconception as well. And so I was like, okay, I want to create spaces because I don't want other people to go through what I did. And I was really intentional in centering Black and Brown folks in these spaces because I knew that that was a way that I would really connect with other folks just because of my own lived experience and because of the other executive board members that I was working alongside. So that was a huge part in recognizing the critical importance of just having conversation in community, period. Then the pandemic began and I didn't have that physical space. But a little bit later into the pandemic, I think it was the later half of 2020 into 2021, I started working at my local hospital. I was a sitter. So for folks who don't know, a sitter is essentially someone who typically gets paired with a person who has experienced crisis or who for some reason is struggling to care for themselves. And essentially you sit with them for your entire shift, if needed, to ensure that they don't harm themselves. And so I started this position, and this was in addition to also having been an RA and seeing other young people go through crisis. And then also having done public health, mental health research out of Columbia University, their department of psychiatry. So I was gaining these different perspectives of mental health outside of my community-based and oriented lens. And when I worked in the hospital, I was seeing folks who were my same age come in. And when I would talk to them, they would express their gratitude for having me to talk to because they felt they would express that they had no one to speak to or they didn't know where to get help. And I was recognizing a trend. I was like, wait a minute, there are so many people who could be my classmates, who could be people in my residence hall who are here. And I get it. I get it. I was in a position of crisis myself. And I have a semicolon tattoo that I would always show them. And without any words having to be said, they would just get it. They would get that I was there, not because I love medicine, but because I love people and because I get the experience that they're going through. And that's when I was like, okay, I need to keep talking about what I was talking about on campus because it's needed. And so that's when I was simultaneously consuming a lot of self-help content. And a lot of it was just missing the mark. A lot of it was waking up at 5 a.m., having your green smoothie, study with me for 8 hours. I was also pre-med in undergrad. So I was watching a lot of just get ready with me and let's study for 12 hours. And I'm like, this is great because you're connected to other people. But it was pushing forth, I feel like, solutions to wellness that were just not possible for folks like me. Like if I was constantly worrying about supporting my mom financially, student loans, working two jobs while doing school, I can't think about waking up at 5 a.m. and having a green smoothie. I'm worrying about bills. I'm worrying about these very real factors. And so therapy affirmed that. I had this new therapist who was super transformative in digging into some of my complex trauma and helping me really understand it while I was also doing that work. And so I decided to take my voice online and specifically TikTok at the time, which was still budding. And I would just share my reflections from therapy. I never told people what to do, what to feel. I don't agree with content positioned in that way. So I was really intentional in just sharing, hey, my therapist told me this is why I feel this. And people really resonated. And that really showed me that there's a need for storytelling and there's a need for sharing my own reflections. And that allowed me to grow a wonderful community. And that has since evolved and led me to other places in the context of mental health work. But that was a really strong part of my journey and still is in terms of even growing my own community and feeling connected to other people as I'm still navigating and have living, not just lived, experience with mental illness.
And you shared a little bit about how you go about creating content. And I'm curious, you've done a really good and meticulous job in thinking about and creating a space that feels safe and empowering for people with your TikTok content. Would you mind sharing a little bit more specifically about what your approach in creating content looks like and what resonates deeply with your audience, especially topics that are often seen as taboo?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I learned, and this was just through being a consumer of the content that I felt like I aspired to understand, I aspired to also create. I recognize that a lot of times folks put on this hat of what is going to reach more people. And so you see folks, instead of saying I, they say you or we. And instead of just speaking about your experience, there's a hook. And I get it, right? In the world of content, it's important to think about, well, how can I strategically reach more people? But sometimes that would border clickbait in the story and the essence of what you were ultimately trying to say would get lost in the pursuit of trying to get the views, the likes, etc. So just sort of observing that and recognizing on the flip side, I was just here reflecting. I'm not saying my approach was better or more successful. There's a reason why so many of my videos don't go viral still till this date, but that's okay. I really feel like for me, integrity in my content and how I capture my own story and lived experience is key to really intentionally speaking to people and connecting with those lived experiences. And so like what I really mean is by talking about what I'm feeling, what I'm going through and how I'm processing that and being a bit more open with those narratives that I'm unpacking, there are folks who are able to then place themselves in my shoes and be like, okay, I navigate this similarly or I relate to this in this way. And this is the advice that he's been given by his therapist or this is what he's learning along the way. How can I now apply that to myself in a way that is conducive to my lifestyle, to my lived experience? And so I've just been intentional in trying to ensure that I keep it open for folks when I do create content. in terms of when I say keep it open, I allow there to be space for folks to think about what I'm sharing and for it to not be prescriptive. I think that is something I'm definitely wary of as a creative.
Yeah, keeping things open and not prescriptive, I think, is a very unique approach and very authentic and organic. And you mentioned virality, and it's some of your posts not going viral, and some of your posts do definitely have a lot more reach. But I think overall, it's very clear that you're a star and are doing really important work and inspiring a lot of people. That has been able to kind of catapult you into the youth advocacy space. And your work has been recognized by many platforms and organizations, including a memorable campaign and collaboration born out of the MTV Mental Health Youth Action Forum at the White House. Could you tell us a little bit more about that and what that was about and what the goals of it were?
What I'll say is, just so that folks can follow along with my journey, when I started to share my voice on TikTok, I had simultaneously been very involved in the youth advocacy space. Well, I was just starting to get a bit more involved outside of the more formal positions I had. So I was like a JED student ambassador at one point. And then at another point, I was part of Active Minds National Advisory Board, where I had the chance to work with, at the time, the Wellbeing Trust, Young Invincibles, and Hope Lab on a unique tool that they were developing, sort of on a council. And so I had been doing the work, but I didn't have really the visibility that I did 2 years ago or now. And TikTok was a big part of what gave me that visibility, right? I was someone who was having the same conversations I had on TikTok in lecture halls. And it wasn't until TikTok where people were like, oh, there's this young adult, Jorge, who is a Latino male who talks about mental health in New Jersey, and he went to Rutgers. And I started to get folks who would inquire about why I talk about what I talk about, how I talk about it. And that ultimately led to me being one of 30 people to participate in the Mental Health Youth Action Forum, which there was an application floating around. It was a very vague application at the time, just within some of the orgs that I was following. I had completed it. And then I was, again, one of 30 selected to essentially participate in what I like to describe as almost a 6-week incubator of sorts, mentorship program, where we had the chance to break off into smaller groups and then have the mentorship of different mental health nonprofit leaders and work on our own creative campaigns to address mental health, to address the youth mental health crisis. And that was really exciting for me because it was the first time that my lived experience, my professional experience, my background in public health, which is what I had studied in addition to being on the pre-medical track in undergrad, and that my newfound love for storytelling and digital strategy sort of all came together. And I was part of this really amazing group where I had the chance to work on a campaign that we again ideated from the very initial stages to what that would look like in the real world. And then it led to a 3-day convening in DC where we had the chance to present those ideas to industry partners and also speak at the White House alongside the First Lady, the Surgeon General, and Selena Gomez, who's a big advocate, celebrity advocate in the space for mental health. And so that experience was a super validating one. And I would say it was so pivotal in my journey because it validated that I can take all of those different experiences that I just listed out a moment ago, in addition to having living experience with mental illness, and I can do something with that. I honestly did feel empowered, and I was equipped during that experience to sort of translate all of those different experiences into a product or a campaign that could potentially resonate with the communities that I identify with. And that was really exciting because that was the first time where I realized that there's more than speaking in a lecture hall. There's more than working in clinical settings. There's more than doing the research. It introduced me to this broader social impact space and specifically youth mental health space that is still growing and is still very new, being a big part of that as well. So that was just till this day one of the most life-changing experiences, because what I tell people is, imagine being a first-generation college student struggling with your own mental illness, then talking about it in lecture halls, and then fast forward, you're looking across the front lawn of the White House, preparing to speak alongside the U.S. Surgeon General on the exact topic. I called my mom. I was like, "Mommy, this is wild." I have no shame in admitting, like, I was so filled with joy during that time, and I'm really grateful.
No, you deserve it. You absolutely deserve it. And our last question is just thinking a little bit about people who might be listening and struggling right now and maybe feeling isolated or misunderstood about their mental health, or people who feel called to want to do something about what's going on, both in the world, whether it relates to mental health and literally everything else that's going on that impacts your mental health. I'm curious what message you might have for them about getting help or about getting involved or about engaging in advocacy. Yeah, just any words of encouragement you might have for folks.
Yeah, so I just want to emphasize, and this is building off of what I was sharing. I was alongside 29 other amazing youth creatives and advocates, and since then have had the chance to share space with other amazing advocates who all have their own lived and living experience with mental illness or know someone who has. And I emphasize that because honestly, through that community that I've now built and have had the privilege of having access to, I've learned and I'm continuing to learn what does it look like to get involved. And there are so many avenues to translating, again, your lived or living experience into impact and into advocacy. And I think I shared earlier what I recommend around getting help. So I really want to drive home like what folks can do to now get involved. And I would say, first and foremost, speak to potential mentors, speak to professors, former teachers, educators, go on LinkedIn, connect with folks in the space who touch mental health work from different areas, nonprofits, startup, clinical spaces. Just have the conversation around what it is that you care about. Don't be afraid to share that with folks and follow a lot of these organizations and companies who are starting to do this work and who are leading this work, because that will allow you to, one, connect with other like-minded folks. And as this space evolves and as there's more traction and as there's an increase in dedicated funds and resources, there will inevitably be opportunities for you to tap into the inner advocate that's always there. And I say it's always there because, in my opinion, being an advocate starts first and foremost with your friends, right? Have the conversation with your friends. Challenge yourself to be vulnerable. Challenge yourself to speak to the folks that you care most, to check in with them, and allow yourself to then take those experiences, take those moments. And again, in conversation with all these other folks, think through what is something I enjoy and how could I use that to capture a story or use that to push forth a resource or use that to help improve a product that is ultimately serving youth and young adults who are struggling with mental illness. That might sound vague to some, but I'm really just trying to drive home the importance of recognizing you're an advocate. You're an advocate first and foremost in your community, with your friends, with your family, and then embrace that inner advocate in the context of the broader youth mental health space by having those conversations, sharing what you're excited to learn about, to work on, and just being open to different opportunities that might come your way. And also recognizing that it doesn't need to be youth mental health specific. You can be part of a fellowship at your school, a research fellowship, and there's always ways to bring in the mental health storylines through all these other opportunities that exist out there in the world for you, whether you're a college student, whether you're a postgrad, whether you're in high school. So yeah, I hope that helps someone, but I have a lot of folks now reaching out to me on LinkedIn with this exact question, and I'm actively sharing the same exact thing I just shared here.
That's going to help a lot of people, Jorge. It's going to help a lot of people, and I love how you first bring it into our communities, into our homes, into the interactions that we have every day, and recognizing that we can be an advocate in that way. Because I think in so many ways, sometimes the problem of the crisis of mental health and kind of the crises that we are experiencing, it feels so overwhelming and you want to have the biggest impact right away. But kind of knowing that you can start where your feet are, start where you literally rest, play, work, sleep, is really a good step. So I just want to say thank you, Jorge, for just really being inspiring and sharing such valuable insights for advocating for youth today. It was a pleasure to listen and learn from you. Until next time, this is Dr. Taiwo Olonge with our podcast producer, Derek, reminding you to keep being you. Peace.